Hello everyone, this is Monsef Asker and thank you so much for being here with us on Your Divine Uniqueness. Very happy to share this space with you guys, so thank you so much for joining us, and also so happy and so honored to have with us today Lisa Smart and Dr. Raymond Moody. And they are very known by the research of decades of research on near-death experiences. And Lisa is a linguist, educator, and author of The Words at the Threshold. And Dr. Raymond is a near-death researcher and best-selling author of Life After Life, Coming Back, Paranormal Glimpses of Eternity, and The Light Beyond. And also, he's working on his upcoming book, God is Bigger than the Bible. And also, they launched recently, I think it was in September, their University of Heaven. And we will talk a little bit about that later during the call. So yeah, as I said, very, very excited to have them with us today as we will be talking about near-death experiences. So with this, Lisa and Dr. Raymond, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you with us here.
Thank you so much. And I understood that Lisa is not feeling well today, so I am
okay.
I am standing in for both of us, and just very happy to be here because I have been studying these near-death experiences since 1962 when I found out about them as a student of philosophy. I was 18 years old, and not having a religious background, had no exposure to the notion of an afterlife, but discovered that Plato and these other early Greek philosophers had studied cases where people had almost died and been revived and had experiences. And then 3 years later, I found such a living person myself, a professor of psychiatry at the University of Virginia. And he was the first I have interviewed of literally thousands of people from all over the world who came to the brink of death and had really extraordinary experiences to tell us about when they got back.
Beautiful. And so we've been researching on near-death experiences for decades now, and like from your research, what did you discover about like something that those people experience that really maybe describe this eternal state of being that is our truth.
Yes. People say, and I have literally talked with people from all over the world, and there is this very similar pattern. Common elements, say 10 or 15 common elements that show up in different people's accounts. But, you know, one person may have two or three or four of these elements, or, you know, 7 to 10 or all of them. But basically what people tell us is that when their heart stops beating, for example, in the course of a cardiac arrest, they may hear their doctor or nurse or somebody else say, oh my God, he's dead, or we've lost her, or words to that effect. But they say from their point of view, they seem to leave their physical bodies and drift up. They often watch the scene of the resuscitation from above, and they say that after a while they become caught up in what appears to be another dimension of reality, that they go through a passageway into a beautiful, very comforting light, and in that light say that relatives or friends of theirs who have already died seem to be there to help them through this experience. They talk about panoramic memory, in which every event of their lives, every action they've ever done, is displayed around them in a sort of hologram. and that in these reviews of their lives, they come to realize that the defining purpose of the of life is to learn to love those with whom that we come into contact. And this is whatever religion people, I mean, I have talked with people from all different religions who say these same things. And so that is the outline of near-death experiences, which now, by the way, physicians all over the world have investigated. This is certainly not a phenomenon of the United States or Europe or any country. I heard the same sorts of reports in China and India and Japan as I have heard in the United States. And I'm sure many people listening to us will recognize this from their own experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And also we have like some of our listeners who also had shared with me that had near-death experiences. And like you said, when people go through these experiences, they when they come back, they come very different. And as you said, like they understand the purpose of life is love, and they start seeing life differently, because maybe now we have, in general, we feel there is a fear of death, and it trigger like so many of us to like pursue so many things like some kind of success, money, or but still we forget about love and what is really essential in life. And and many of them, like when they come back, they bring some information, like new information that we weren't like aware of, and help us to come together like in oneness. There's so much truth about that. And also in your book, you talk about shared death experience.
Yes.
I would love if you can describe it. And,
yes. Well, to put this in context of the current debate, I mean, everybody has, I'm sure by now, heard of near-death experiences, and probably also many have heard this sort of common argument or debate that goes on between those who look at these near-death experiences and think that they are credible and that they suggest an afterlife. And on the other hand, people who look at the same experiences and tell us that these are effects of the oxygen deprivation of the brain during a cardiac arrest, during the resuscitation period, the brain may be partially deprived of oxygen, and people say, well, this is the explanation of these experiences. The difficulty with that is the common occurrence of what we call shared death experiences that you mentioned, which are identically the same experiences we've come to recognize it as a near-death experience. The getting out of the body, the seeing the light, the seeing apparitions of the deceased, and so on, except that these occur not to a patient who is severely ill or almost dies and is revived, but rather occurs to somebody who is there in the presence of the death of someone else, that is, a bystander at the bedside when, for example, one of their loved ones is dying. And it's a common occurrence that during the period where somebody else is there with a person who is dying, that the bystander will tell us that they empathically co-live part of the dying experience of the person who passed away. And I hear this both commonly from physicians who were attending dying patients, or I hear it also from family members who were left behind after a loved one died. And one of the more common things you hear with people from this is that they say that as the person who is passing away dies, that the bystander sees something leave the body of the dying person. And this is often described as sort of roundish, like a golden or golden-grayish light, as I've heard it described. And I hear this from physicians who are puzzled by this. It's a group of physicians in San Francisco years ago, I remember, was discussing this, being like, what is that light that they acknowledged that they had seen leaving dying patients, but what is that? And another fairly common occurrence is that somebody who is there at the bedside of a dying person, that as the person dies, the bystander himself or herself say that they leave their own physical bodies and go up, and very often describe how they see the light and they accompany their dying loved one partway toward this light. Or people at the bedside may say that they see the apparitions of the dying person's loved ones who have already passed away coming into the room as though to help escort them away. And most incredibly, and this one to me is rather startling, but I do have cases in which the bystander, as a loved one was dying, the bystander empathically co-lived the dying life review of the person who passed away, and which to me sounds horribly intrusive and embarrassing, but is reported by people who say this, that it's perfectly natural. And in a way, you can understand this in some cases. I talked with a woman years ago who had been married to the same man for 30 years. They had been, they had known each other literally since birth. They were neighbors as children and grew up together and evolved into a marriage. And she said that as he was dying in the hospital and she was sitting there with him, that they were surrounded by this sort of holographic panorama of everything he had done. And that kind of closeness, well, you can sort of maybe kind of understand. However, I have heard this same thing, for example, from a physician who was called to the emergency room to resuscitate a patient that he had never seen before. And as he was trying to resuscitate this man, what the physician took to be images of the man's life appeared all around. So, you know, to me this, you know, to me this is fascinating information because, you know, before I went to medical school, my prior background was I got a PhD in philosophy and I was a philosophy professor. So these things, you know, I mean, I am accustomed to talking philosophical problems and questions. However, I'm also a medical doctor and a psychiatrist, and I realize that many people are you know, very startled by this kind of information. The difficulty is that it presents itself everywhere. There are numerous medical doctors now have written on these experiences, and so I think the medical community is really beginning to take this very seriously.
Yeah. Now that was really fascinating, like the experience that you share, and maybe it shows that we are connected, like we are not like separate beings.
That's right.
At some level, we are connected.
You are so right, and you know what people say in that life review? they say you see everything you've ever done all at once, because in this state of consciousness there is no time. Everything is just there at once. And they say that when you re-experience each action of your life, you don't review it from the consciousness that from the person you were, that you don't see it from that point of view, that you experience your action in from the feelings and the point of view and the vision of the person with whom you've interacted. So you are that person in the review, right? Is that when you review your life, you are the people. You see it from the point of view of the the other people in your life. And that is a sobering point for me, I tell you. But, you know, it's sobering it may be, but it's apparently reality. I gather we can say for certainty now that at least for some of us, life is a two-phase process. We lead it forward as the actor or protagonist, and then we have a 180-degree whirl around where we re-witness that same action from the viewpoint and the feelings of the other people with whom we interacted.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow, that's really fascinating. And yeah, also I remember my friend a few years ago, he had an accident, and he also had this he saw the review of all his life and people he knew. And like you said, it's when they are in that stage, they are those people, that's their review, and they feel them. And maybe the what we can learn from it is that we are all connected, and maybe before judging each other, and we can put ourselves in the position of others, and we may understand their own point of view, because there are unlimited point of views that we can have, and we can allow all of them coexist together. So that's really fascinating. And from the near-death experiences that you studied, what was their perspective after they came back about the divine or God or the universe?
That's very interesting, because I was fortunately spared a religious education in the United States. And I say that because I am from the Deep South in the United States, and there is some sort of severe religion down there. And so my dad was, he was kind of cynical and sarcastic about religion, and I escaped that. And my first real notion of having to do with an afterlife was in reading Plato, as I said. So I sort of entered it not as a religious thing, but as a philosophical question. And so what has impressed me as I've gone around the world, that whatever their religion before this experience was, they say that, or whether they didn't even have religion, some of them didn't, they say after this experience that they are absolutely solidly convinced of the existence of the divine or of God, right? And they also say that it transcends any particular religion. And even though they may keep on in their own religion, they may be joined some other. It's actually fairly rare for people to join a new religion. Mostly people say they stay where they are, but that they realize that it's not with any absolutist. You know, it's that God is big enough for everyone's religion, kind of, is the point of view they proclaim. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is what you are talking about in the work in the book that you are working on right now.
Yes.
About the vastness of God, because like there are so many names that we have as humans to call God or the universe or all there is, and like from my understanding is that as humans we try to how to describe it like to make one definition that fits everyone instead of allowing like each
That's
one
right.
have their own experience and then share it with us. Because
That's
it's
right.
really vast.
And one way of doing that to me is to think, I don't think of God in terms of beliefs. I think of God in terms of relationships, right?
Exactly.
Because I figure that you and I are just limited human beings. Any belief that you and I could formulate about God would probably be off in one direction or another, right? But
yes.
What I say is I have a relationship with God, and I'm sure you do too. It's like, right, that it's like I think of God's in terms of relationships. I've kind of given up on trying to understand it intellectually. To me, mm-hmm. it boils down to relationships, like you. Well, for example, I mean, this is hardly even scratches the surface of it, but one thing is prayer, right? I mean, I just, I'm sure lots of people have had the most amazing experiences with prayer like I have, and other aspects of the relationship with God. For example, back in 1990 in May, I moved into an old building. It was a grist mill. That is a place with a water wheel on the outside where they ground wheat and corn into flour. And it had last been rewired in 1950. So I knew it needed rewiring, but I didn't have any. I didn't have the money at that time.
Mm-hmm.
3 years and 4 months later, my wife said, well, we can get the money together now for the rewiring, but we didn't know an electrician. So we held hands by our kitchen sink, and we prayed that God would send us just the right electrician. The next morning, the phone rang, and my wife picked up the phone, and she said, hello, and a voice on the other end said, hello, this is B.R. Wilson. And Cheryl said, yes, B.R., what is it? And he said, well, your number just came up on my beeper. And Cheryl said, well, we haven't made any phone calls this morning, B.R. What's this all about? And he said, well, I'm an electrician. So Cheryl said, well, B.R., we do need an electrician. Come on over. So he came over. He did his inspection. And finally, he went back out on the porch. I sat down on the porch. My wife escorted B.R. out to his van. Within less than a minute, I'm sure they were back up on the porch. And what had happened when Cheryl was putting B.R. into his van, he said, it's going to be a few days before I can get out here to do this, he said, because I come from a very close family around here. We all love each other very much, and my 38-year-old brother dropped dead of a heart attack the other day, and my mother had a heart attack on the way home from the funeral home. So so Cheryl said, well, B.R., my husband might be able to help you with that. He talks with people who've had, you know, losses and so on. And B.R. said, well, my mother gave me this book called Life After Life to read, and it's helping some. And that was the book that I wrote. Now, we got a good electrician out of that, but we got a good friend, too, because 25 years later, B.R. is still our friend. But what I'm talking about is God interacts in your relationships. It doesn't have to be an abstract set of formulas or beliefs, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with you, and it's this relationship. It's continuously expanding as we are going through more and more experiences. Like it's a lifelong experience, and and also we may need some amount of flexibility and openness. Because many times we cling to some definitions, but when we are open, like we may be fascinated by what we can experience and discover. That was beautiful. And to tell everybody that also you can ask your questions. If you are on the phone, you can raise your hand by pressing *2 on your phone, and then I will unmute you. And if you are on the webcast page, which is yourdivineuniqueness.com/live, there is a question box there. Just scroll down and you will find it, and you can type in your questions there. And
I must change phones for 1 minute. I'll be right back.
Sure. And also, if there is any one of you who experienced maybe a near-death experience, you can maybe share it with us, whether on the phone or maybe on the webcast, and then I will read it. So I feel it can be also inspiring to all of us. And
I'm so sorry. I'm back. I was caught in the wire. I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. No worries. Wonderful. So, I want to ask you, because when we see like people pass away, like before they die, sometimes they start talking about beings that they see, that we can't see. So, did people that you studied their NDEs experience such a thing?
This is very common. I can tell you as a physician, I one of my areas of specialization was death and dying of the terminally ill, and yes, this is a very common thing that during the dying process people will seem to see and converse with other beings. Sometimes apparently the spirits of their departed relatives and friends, or other times some angelic appearing being or something. Yes, I mean, this mm-hmm. is such a common thing at the bedside of the dying. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And did they share something like a connection that they had with them, or maybe interaction, or it was just maybe witnessing those beings?
Well, it was interactive in the sense that sometimes it appears just to be witnessing, as though they're seeing mm-hmm. something. Other times there does seem to be interacting, as though they're conversing, or they are carrying on a conversation. Yeah, so either both of them, I would say, both occur. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's really quite interesting because, I very well understand as a medical doctor what a delirium is, and I've seen many, many delirious patients who are in a confused state of consciousness, but this is not delirium. This is, they are in a clear and coherent state of consciousness, so much so that they can also often tell you that they understand that you're not seeing that person. I remember a lady in her 80s who was talking with some deceased relative or whatever, I suppose, and she looked at me and she smiled and she said, "Oh, Dr. Moody, I know that you think I'm just having a hallucination." And I said, no, I understand this by this. But the fact that she would have that conversation, see, she was not in a confused state. She knew what was going on. And so this is quite fascinating when you see it at the bedside of dying patients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It is wonderful. And yeah, you shared earlier about your background, and also like as you had a PhD in philosophy and also a medical doctor, and also like when we are like coming from a scientific background, I also come from scientific background. I was an engineer, and I know there is because we ask lots of questions. And my question is, how was it for you when you started this work? Like, was it easy to like touch upon such subjects? And because maybe sometimes it's difficult to accept this, and also like even go deeper into it.
Well, I think that this was never particularly difficult for me to accept, that these people were reporting reality as they saw it. The very first person I ever knew, who had such an experience was this Dr. George Ritchie, who was a professor of psychiatry, and I knew George for decades after that. And George was for real, and so can I say so about thousands and thousands of people who have had these near-death experiences, that they are, they are sincerely reporting what they experienced, and that it obviously changed their lives. That much I know. I also knew from about 1972 on that it wasn't anything to do with oxygen deprivation to the brain, because, you know, because bystanders have the same experience, and yet they have no illness or injury. But my bafflement just came from that. I didn't know what it was. I mean, that continued to elude me. And so where I have finally come with it is, I think a big turning point for me was some years ago. And in terms of the University of Heaven that we're going to do, I want to say that on this website we're forming, because I am so fascinated by this stuff. I mean, I think there has to be a serious forum where you can come and like to get really serious information about this. And so we are having a series of webinars, and you can look at them. You can look at all the program on www.theuniversityofheaven.com, and you can go there and see all these programs. Well, one of them that's coming up is, I found out about this experience that I finally realized I give up. And then I came to accept that, yeah, there is life after death. And what happened was, there is a graphic artist whose name is Jeffrey Olson. And some years ago, Jeffrey had come up to me after a lecture I gave on near-death experiences. And he said that he had a profound near-death experience in which he was almost killed in a car crash, and he lost his leg, and his wife was killed during the accident, and so on. So he described to me his near-death experience, and I encouraged him to write it up, because that's how artists process, obviously, is to... So anyway, some time later, he got back in touch with me, and he said that he was writing this up, and then as he kept writing it up, he realized that, you know, mostly patients don't tell their doctors about these near-death experiences for reasons that anybody listening to this can probably guess, right? And so he hadn't told his doctor, but when he got around to telling his doctor about this experience. His doctor is named Dr. O'Driscoll, who is a trauma surgeon. And so Dr. O'Driscoll acknowledged that during the surgery, he was confident that Jeff wasn't going to die because, as Dr. O'Driscoll put it, he talked to Jeffrey's deceased wife and saw her, I gather, during the surgical procedure. And I know of other cases that like this where the doctor has actually empathically participated in the near-death experience of the patient. And so Dr. O'Driscoll and Jeffrey Olson are coming up on one of the webinars. And our first one, which is November 13th, and it's coming up, and again, you can find out about it on the website, and it is with Dr. Eben Alexander and his associate, Karen Newell. And Dr. Alexander was a professor of neurosurgery at Harvard who had a profound near-death experience. And so he will be the first one of our interviewees. And then we're also going to be interviewing Dr. Anthony Chicoria, who is an eminent professor of orthopedic surgery, who had a near-death experience when he was hit in the neck by a bolt of lightning and for unknown reasons, fascinated by the piano. And to make a long story short, now in addition to professor of orthopedic surgery, he's an acclaimed concert pianist. So I just hope people will look in and, you know, take a look at our place, because I'm really excited about this, because I think the time has come to really get this information out to them in a very serious way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really needed at the time to come together, like to marry science and spirituality, because they can work together. And really, with the work you are doing, it's really such a great contribution to this, and bringing this really important information to people all around the world. So thank you for the work you are doing. And everyone, you can learn more about that. There is the link on the live page, and also it will be available on the replay page, and there is the details about the webinars. In the link, you will find the first six webinars, the coming six webinars, as you said, that are starting on November 13, with Dr. Eben Alexander and Karen Newell. And also, you did recently a series of webinars called Consciousness and the Beyond with Pragit and Julian from the Stargate Experience. Yeah.
Yes.
And what was it about? Because also, like, people can look at it. There is a link for it on the live page and also the replay page. So what was the series about?
Well, our association was based on the fact that they were so kind to help us, and as we were trying to learn to negotiate how to teach through the internet, they were just so helpful to us. And so they had a very nice interview with us as we were getting set up, and it's about the near-death experience works and other things. We had a comprehensive seminar with them, and so that was a delightful time that we had with those two. So that was a really enjoyable program for me, and I think they seem to enjoy it too.
Absolutely. They've been with us maybe twice on the show, and it was really such a delight to connect with them and have them. And so wonderful. Thank you for for really doing this really wonderful work and helping people like awaken to this information, because it's really life changing, and also it will help us to come together as one when we know this truth. So really thank you for offering those. And so everyone, you can learn more about both the NDE Consciousness Forum and also about the Conscious and the Beyond webinar series. There is the two links on the live page, yourdivineuniqueness.com/live, or on the replay page, yourdivineuniqueness.com/replay. Wonderful. And we have a caller from Whitehall. Phone number ending with 6777. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, this is Destiny.
Hi, Destiny.
I have noticed that throughout the years, most near-death experiences have resulted in people coming back with stories, but not only that, with gifts. With their gifts either fully intact, just all of a sudden knowing. And I was wondering what that connection could possibly be. If Raymond has some kind of sense of what that connection is.
You know, that is a great question, Destiny, and I am puzzled about that too, because now these are fairly rare, but even a small percentage of people with such a vast number of people with near-death experiences, you find some really fascinating and puzzling cases of people who come back after a near-death experience with some extraordinary talent that they didn't have before.
Yeah,
and one of them, this is now over 20 years ago, I'm sure, but in Ontario, there was this phenomenal lady who became a very accomplished artist. And I was lecturing in Toronto, and she came to my presentation with her big leather packages, all those artists, you know, those zipper cases they bring, and showed me these really amazing paintings. She was an award-winning artist, and she said she never had any interest or ability in art until she had her near-death experience, and it came on her spontaneously. Another fascinating case is a man that we're going to interview in a couple of months here, Dr. Anthony Chicoria, who's a professor of orthopedic surgery, who had a near-death experience in 1996, and through an amazing series of events, was sort of guided to play the piano and is now an acclaimed concert pianist. And on the same program with him will be Kevin Fortune, who's an acclaimed composer and performer who was inspired to music by his near-death experience. So, and that's a great question you asked, Destiny, because somehow I think creativity and this extraordinary state of consciousness that people have during their
near-death experiences
must be somehow connected. They must be, yeah.
Maybe, well, I imagine if we went and we actually seen God, that it would open up something within us that had previously been kind of closed down for a bit, you know? So it's like opened all the channels up.
Yeah.
And for some, it could even be like that is what their part of their plan is, you know what I mean? In order to reach that state of consciousness, it opened them up to something new that was part of their plan. Like it was predestined to be that way.
Well,
yeah.
I will say that people come back from these experiences committed to becoming more loving, but also not much better prepared to do it. I mean, it's like people say you still come back saddled with your humanity. And so that it takes a sort of reflective and, you know, spiritual path to keep it going. As I like to say, let's face it, it's very hard to get through the average day without wanting to choke at least one person, right? That's the reality. And that doesn't change after a near-death experience. But what does change is the commitment to really, you know, try to get hold of ourselves as human beings.
Like they saw the bigger picture. They saw the big picture and seeing that all of the small things don't matter as much. Mm-hmm. What really matters is why we're here, and it's not so much for us as it is for everybody else. You know what I mean? What can we do for other people to make this planet a better place? Not so much what can we do for ourselves, but what can
we do
for others?
That is so true, and you sound like, from your voice, you're young, but from what you say, you're old, because that is, I'm 74 now, and the way I like to say it is, I am tired of Raymond Moody. And then when I'm speaking to an audience, I look out in the audience, and people who are my age are just kind of unconsciously nodding, you know, like, yes, yes. Whereas people who are young are looking there like thinking, he must be depressed, right? But no, I'm not depressed. When you're in your 70s, it's a very natural thing to accommodate yourself to mortality. And it can be a fascinating process. It's like I say, you know, I'm not a bit afraid of death. It's life that scares me.
Right, right. Very nice call. I really like, I enjoy this. This is nice. Thank you. Thank you for bringing
this.
Thank
you, Destiny.
You have a blessed day. Thank you, Raymond.
Thank you.
Thank you, Destiny. Much
love.
Thank
you, Mansa.
Beautiful. That was really wonderful. And so again, everyone, if you want to ask your question or maybe share your if you had an NDE before you want to share it, you can raise your hand by pressing star 2 on your phone or write it on the live page, yourdivineuniqueness.com/live, on the question box there. And here we have Tina from Lancaster. She wrote, after my near-death experience, I had many things change in my life and started this awakening journey. Wonder if this is the extreme measure for us to awaken to our destiny.
Well, I think a near-death experience is one good way to awaken to your destiny. I mean, and so I'm assuming you're doing all right on that score, but I guess there are other ways to awaken to your destiny. And that, again, that's a very profound question, because really the answer is, I don't know. But I have a few experiences in my life where it really did seem that things came together from some other dimension of reality, and that we are probably not going to be able to understand these things until we change the basic logic by which we operate. Because, see, I was a professor of logic, and so, but I don't want to get technical here, but...
Yes.
There is a difficulty in thinking about life after death from the logical point of view, but there are other things in life that force us to do it. For example, I have now this most wonderful son who is 20 years old, and his name is Carter. And we adopted Carter at the moment of his birth. The obstetrician delivered him and handed him to my wife, Cheryl. And we had been down there, that was in July of 1998. And we had been down there to Texas a few months before in April of 98 to get to know the family. And so anyway, and on the day that Carter was able to leave the hospital, which is the typical 3 days, they keep babies in the hospital for 3 days. So on that third day, my wife and I went and we all went to this restaurant there in Texas, and present were Carter's biological maternal grandfather and grandmother, and Carter's biological mother, and Cheryl, my wife, and Carter and his little baby carry-on seat, and myself. And we were sitting there in the restaurant, and what we were talking about in the conversation was that Carter will always know about his birth family, and that in the fullness of time we will get back together, and so on. And in the midst of this, I looked up, and there on the wall of the restaurant was a placard, and this is what the placard said: "Closed. I have gone out to find myself. If I should arrive before I return, please hold me till I come back." Now, and incidentally, it came to pass eventually, just as in April of 2011, the whole family came, and we bowed to our house in Alabama, and we spent a whole week together. And so my point is, there's more to this world than meets the eye. And in terms of these awakening moments, sometimes you have to be on the lookout, and sometimes you can only see that they were awakening moments in retrospect when you look back on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. Wonderful. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And also thank you, Gina, for sharing your experience. And yeah, let's invite our second caller. We have a caller from Tannersville, phone number ending with 1012. Hello.
Hi, thanks for your good work. Raymond Moody, I spent a few weeks with you in Las Vegas, 2001, as my sister was passing at that time, Jack Lynchner.
Oh, yeah, Jack.
And we met Edgar Mitchell, who came to your classes at Las Vegas.
Yes,
UNLV.
Yes, Jack.
And
oh,
I was the guy that worked on a couple of launches at Cape Canaveral, a Courier 1B, and you knew right away what Courier 1B was about, so it's amazing.
I absolutely did. I was a space nut, and I absolutely met Wernher von Braun twice, and had read his original articles, Jack, in Collier's Magazine, which probably remember.
I do. Raymond, what I wanted to ask you about, the importance of death and dying, I've studied that directly, indirectly for many, many years. There's many spiritual leaders that say it's important as you're passing that you remember something like the name of God or this or that. These are all traditions.
Yeah.
But my question is, if somebody is at that point of transition, any suggestions from your experiences as what they might remember to not to leave in fear, but in the adventure of going on to the next dimension, which we're all part of. So I'd love for you to comment on that.
It is, Jack, and I'm sorry to say that I have thought and thought about that. And In terms of acute interventions, I don't know. But what I can say, especially to the young people listening, is this, that when I look back at my life, Jack, and you and I were around in the time of the classical education, right? But I can tell you here at age 74 that a big formative moment in my life was at the age of 18 reading Plato's Phaedo, his dialogue, which is about the execution of Socrates. And, Jack, it is exactly the answer to your question, because what Plato says is, and this is, the young people should listen to this, said, philosophy is a rehearsal for dying. That is, that if you really start early and you think about this question of life after death, or just death in general, your whole life, and you philosophize about it, then when you get like me at age 74, you're ready. I mean, in the sense that I don't want any pain in the process, right? I mean, no, I'm praying every day on no pain, no pain, no pain. But in terms of the process, it's, as you say, it's a great adventure. And so one thing our society needs to do is to awaken people to the adventure of death. I mean, it's and I don't mean to sound morbid, but, you know, if somebody is in their 70s and they are not thinking cheerfully and optimistically about this prospect, then there's something wrong with them. That's the fact.
Well, our educational process is not bringing that awareness, and that's what you're doing, and that's why I hope whenever you're giving a workshop, that you remind others what you're saying now, how to prepare for that transition point, not as a loss, but as another opportunity to continue the adventure that we're all participating in. So I hope that message, because you can have callers that'll tell you about all their wonderful experiences, which I could go on for days of my own. It's all extraordinary adventure. We come from the divine, we merge back in the divine, and the more we realize that gift, the more we are prepared for whatever challenges come up.
Yeah, and as Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, said, I heard years later in a tape he made, but that I had heard long before that from my own geriatric patients when I did a year of geriatric psychiatry, talking many, you know, with patients who were, you know, they were in good shape cognitively. They were just there for some, you know, situational thing or whatever. But I heard constantly this remark that the older you get, the more the impression develops when you look back at your life that it had been a kind of play or script, right? And
yes,
it's like, and I'm sure you've had that. And I now I've reached the point where I'm seeing it too. It reminds me, Elie Wiesel, who was a person of your young years and my young years, not so well known anymore, but sadly, Elie Wiesel, the great scholar who survived Auschwitz,
that's for sure,
said, God made man because he loves stories. And isn't that true? You know, it's when you get to a certain point, you look back and your life is a story.
It's true. The Sanskrit talk in terms of God was having a conversation. There was no one to know me, so I separated myself from myself so I could love myself.
Yeah. And similarly, that reminds me of one I like along those lines from Meister Eckhart. The eyes with which I see God are the same eyes with which God sees me.
Yes. Raymond, I hope we can speak at another time. You have my phone number there. I have much to share. My life has been my bucket list. It's not in my life's experience. It's been extraordinary. And I'm so grateful for all the extraordinary men and women and that I've met over the years, from Sai Baba, the Dalai Lama, Mother, on and on and on. And so I hope we can talk at another time, not to take away from the precious gift of this moment here that we're sharing.
Thank you so much, Jack. It's so wonderful to be in touch with you.
it is, and likewise. So thank you for all the wonderful work that you're doing. And let me know when we could talk again, when it's convenient. And again, it's to how to bring forward to others that are in the transition point to be prepared in gratitude, not in fear.
That's
love
right.
to you.
Love to you. And that is one of the aims that I have in this, the University of Heaven programs that we're doing, because, you know, just in my age range, I know there's just so many people in my age range who are beginning to reflect on these things now, but I'm just hoping to provide a forum where we can bring really, really good people, doctors who've had near-death experiences and or who've studied near-death experiences, and to give some sort of picture for folks as to what the dying process will bring. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jack, for calling in. Much love. And yeah, that was a really wonderful discussion you had, Dr. Raymond. And also maybe from maybe small experience, like people in our family, for example, who passed away. There are just a few people, so I can't make an assumption from that. But when in like the last few hours when they passed away, they were saying that they felt at peace, so it wasn't painful, and it was more like people around who felt the pain and of the loss, and like were felt sadness. But the ones who passed away, it was they felt really peaceful, and it was easy for them.
Yes.
So we have Alan C. Bohm from Denmark. Hello, Monsef and Mr. Moody. This is Alan from Denmark. I had an NDE in 2003. I died in a car crash and flew up in a tunnel full of green colors. And at the same time, it was holographic, and I was ending in a kind of courtroom where I had conversations with some very highlight beings, and was reminded of my purpose, of why I was here in a human vessel. I was allowed to bring back with me some evidence from there, and it also accelerated my awareness to a much higher level. Then I was sent back through the birth channel into my car. Wow, it's impossible to describe these beautiful light beings. Thank you for listening, Alan from Copenhagen.
Oh, wonderful! Thank you so much, Alan. That's just wonderful. And yeah, I've heard so many experiences like that from people all around the world, and it's always thrilling to hear yet another. So thank you so much for sharing that with me. And as you mentioned, the ineffability or indescribability of this is a very common feature. No matter how articulate they may be, people say that they simply have no words to describe this adequately.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Alan. Very grateful to you to share your experience. Really beautiful and very inspiring. Thank you so much. And So Dr. Moody, really thank you. Thank you so much for really this special time that you spent with us. It was really such an honor to connect with you, to have you here with us, with our audience.
I am just honored and delighted as well. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me.
Wonderful. Thank you. Very grateful to you, Dr. Moody. And again, everyone, if you want to learn more about the University of Heaven, there is the two links either on the webcast page, which is yourdivineuniqueness.com/live, or you will find it today on the replay page, which is yourdivineuniqueness.com/replay. And then you will find about the NDE Consciousness Forum and also the series Consciousness and the Beyond, which was hosted by Dr. Raymond Moody and Pragit and Julian from the Stargate Experience. Again, thank you again, Dr. Moody. Very grateful to you, and thank you to everyone. Really grateful to each and every one of you for joining us today and sharing with us this really beautiful space. And so I'm sending you so much love, and see you on the next call. Bye bye, everyone.
Bye bye. Thank you so much. Bye.